Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about most of the time. And it is our news and information hour now, and we thank yet again Larry Grover for joining us. Whoever else, who did we have, bud? I don't know, man. I forget who our guests are from half the time.
Let me look at the list.
Who do we have, man? Well, we had Larry Grover and Bob Green. Yeah, that's right.
I'm checking the list.
You don't have to check the list. I already got the name. It was Robert Green. Thank you all. And anyway, welcome to the News and Information Hour here. And we'll see if we've got anything worth talking about. Doesn't look like it yet. Doesn't look like it yet. Well, you know, it's all been about the Occupy Wall Street, you know.
Yeah, that was a race car driver, too.
Now, here is one here, and this is typical of these right-wing sites. The Communist Party marches in solidarity with Occupy Chicago. So we got another right-wing bunch of audio here. See, the Communist Party sucks. Everybody knows that. But to make an issue out of the Communist Party marching in solidarity with Occupy Chicago, it means who's ever sending me this audio once again has got an agenda. President Obama remarks at Martin Luther King. Okay, that's fine. But then we have Lady Gaga serenades former President Clinton. And she actually had flipped somebody off, I think, and dropped an F-bomb. Oh, man, it is hot in this place. All right, so why don't we do this? Why don't we take a look at that story? It's a sad story, and it is the story of the IndyCar driver losing his life in that race. And I heard an awful lot of comment today about the short track they were on. I think they were on a track that was a mile and a quarter. I'm not sure. About the number of cars that were on the track. And, you know, obviously this is a very, very popular driver as well and a very, very successful driver as well. And it was a terrible, terrible accident. But, you know, automobile racing is a dangerous sport. It's a sport that also, as we've said often on the show, contributes to the average consumer more so than just about any other sport. In fact, I don't know of any sport that contributes to the life of the average consumer like automobile racing, because those cars that they race are really, these are the test pilots, the guys that drive those, and they're testing the equipment. It can be fuel, it can be tires, it can be carburation, it can be any number of things that are tested out on those race courses. And eventually, what they find gets incorporated into the average passenger car. Dan Weldon, two-time Indianapolis 500 winner Dan Weldon, died when his car got caught up in a 15-car pileup, sailing over another vehicle and then smashing into a catch fence at the IndyCar season's ending race at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Wade Cunningham, who was also caught up in the wreck, said, "Things happen in this kind of a race. It's so close, not much room for error. I was near the front of what caused all of this, so I'm not thrilled about it. At this point, whose fault it is kind of immaterial. The green flag had barely stopped waving when disaster struck. Weldon, driving from the back of the field for a chance at $5 million, was moving through the pack when he drove into a tangle of cars careening off of each other in every direction. Unable to avoid the massive wreck unfolding before him, Weldon clipped another car and went hurtling through the air and was killed." There's also a pre-race blog that Dan Weldon wrote, and some of the comments are telling. "I've always been a driver who's driven by winning, and that's why I'm so enthused about the GoDaddy Indy Challenge." These are blogs, by the way, that were meant for public consumption. "Here are the basics. I'll start at the back of the 34-car field for Sunday's 300-mile race. If I win, I'll split $5 million with Ann Babenko of Highbridge, New Jersey, who was chosen in a random drawing. So far, things haven't been going very well as we've started our pursuit of the GoDaddy IndyCar Challenge this weekend at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, but I'm confident in the ability of the guys to find the problem and get it fixed." I guess they had problems with the car and so forth. So the race was a $5 million challenge, and the winning share was $5 million that the winner would split with a member of the public who had won a drawing, and it's a very rough sport. One of the things about auto racing is the only sport where death is a constant threat, or it is a constant worry. Football, baseball, basketball, hockey, none of those sports involve the ever-present danger of dying. Serious injury? Yeah. No question about it. Career-ending injury? Yes. The fact that you could lose your ability to make a living if you're injured seriously enough, all of that is true. But in auto racing, the end of your life, that's facing you with every race. And a lot of people comment about, why do people go to races? Do they want to see the accidents? And the answer is obviously yes. Does that make them bad people? No. Any more than it makes you a bad person to laugh at a certain kind of joke. See, what I'm saying is there are very instinctive reactions that we have as human beings that don't go through the usual critical analysis and judgment that many thoughts do. One of them is laughter. We don't sit and think, I wonder if I should laugh at that joke. It's really funny. I better not. Oh, yes, it is. Okay, yes, it's funny. We don't do that. We just hear something funny, we laugh. And then someone looks at us and goes, how dare you laugh at something? I'm sorry, it seemed funny to me. And then we find ourselves apologizing for laughing because, oh my goodness, I found something really tasteless funny. What does that say about me? I wonder if there's something wrong with me, Then we have to go into analysis because we find certain jokes funny. No, it may have to do with our experience. It may have to do with the fact that we, know more about life than a lot of other people. That we've used humor in our lives to keep the sadness, to keep the tragedy at bay, And the other is what we stop to look at, what we automatically turn and watch. We don't have there's no real critical filter there. We just boom, there it is. Let's take a look. An explosion. That's got nothing to do with the kind of person you are. So, if you find yourself getting an adrenaline fix or some sort of rush out of seeing automobiles flying through the air, you're not alone. Every human being on Earth gets the same adrenaline rush. Some people avoid it by simply not going to automobile races, and then they can say, how sick you are. Well, you mean you don't go to see... No, I don't. I don't go to that at all. Now, that's the way some people avoid that. And really what they're saying is, I'm afraid of how I'm going to be fascinated and how I'm going to be drawn to the very same things that you are, so therefore I'm not going to go to these races. That doesn't make them better people. That makes them a little dishonest, if you want my honest opinion, because they're saying, I'm not going to the races because I find that kind of thing uninteresting and I think it's horrific. No, you don't. If you went to the races, you would watch it just like everybody else. The reason why you're not going to the race is so you don't have to be in a position of having to watch it. Does that mean we hate this man, Mr. Weldon, or we hate these drivers that are at risk, some of them losing their lives? No, it doesn't at all. It means that we're watching people doing something that is on the edge, that is life-threatening, that is compelling because of those very things. That's why we want to watch that. That's why we watch the High Wire Act. That's why we watch the Lion Tamers. That's why we watch all that stuff. And I remember growing up, my family was big into auto racing. Not oval track, but because my father worked in Europe for a long time, Grand Prix racing. And I remember Pete Revson. These are really old names. But these are the names that I came to know as a kid. Pete Revson was an heir to the Revlon cosmetic fortune. Well, he didn't give a damn. All he wanted to do was drive race cars really fast. And he died in South Africa. And Jim Clark, who was a Scottish driver, a great driver, he was killed. and the near misses. Niki Lauda. I think they're making a movie out of Niki Lauda's life. Niki Lauda was an Austrian Grand Prix driver who was burned terribly in an automobile racing accident, and came back to race with his half of his face scarred, his hair gone on one side of his face. He didn't make any attempt to cover it up, didn't make any attempt to wear a wig, didn't make any attempt, nothing. There he is, one half of his face just about burned away, and his scalp as well, and Niki Lauda's back at it. All kinds of different people. It's why it's interesting. These are people, we don't get it. We don't understand. Maybe we wish we had that kind of guts. Maybe we think they're crazy, but we think it's interesting. It's fascinating. And if you don't believe me, go down and stand near pit row during a race. If you can get down and stand next to pit row during any kind of motor race, you will understand immediately why people get a thrill out of motor racing. There's power and there is speed. And there is urgency, and it's not a baseball game, and it's not a hockey game, it's not a basketball game, it's not foot. This is automobile racing, and one wrong turn, and you're dead. You're just basically dead. So, and as a result,
that's why you went into auto racing.
That's why I went into auto racing, and then segued after winning all those championships into talk radio. And aren't I having fun now? All right, we'll be back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. And don't forget PhilHenryShow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Turn the music down before I go crazy with that garbage. Welcome back here to the show.
Wrong with that.
I can't stand that bumper music. All right, scientists who monitored women in the months before they became pregnant found that those who were suffering from long-term stress had more girls. Those who had short-term anxieties also took longer to conceive. It's the latest study to suggest that the circumstances in which babies are conceived, such as their parents' diet and lifestyle, plays an important role in their development. Experts say it could mean women being told to watch their stress levels as well as their diet and lifestyles when trying for a baby. Dr. Cecilia Piper...
What's that mean?
I don't know. Dr. Cecilia, it means that if you want to have a girl or a boy, you got to figure out how stressed out you are, I guess. Dr. Cecilia Piper from the Department of Public Health at Oxford University said, "This research addressed healthy women in the UK trying for a baby. This area is important to research because we need to identify ways of making pregnancies and babies as healthy as possible. We want to understand what factors influence the chances of a pregnancy being normal. Many couples are very keen to know what they should do to improve their chances of conceiving and having a healthy baby. And this research will help us provide the best advice." This is sexy stuff, man.
Well, it's important information.
For who? New California law bars e-verify requirement for employers. For years, activists against illegal immigration pushed cities across California to adopt ordinances ordering businesses to verify that their employees were eligible to work in the U.S. Several cities, including Temecula, Murrieta, and Lake Elsinore, complied and required businesses to enroll in e-verify, an online program that...
Not really happening.
No, this ain't happening tonight at all, man. Horrific footage of little Chinese girls killed, cache of high-powered guns stolen from the LAPD, Occupy the Tundra, oh my God. Now I know that Mr. Weldon has died. French court orders a cop-watching site blocked. Well, a court in France, I guess, it says a court here, but it's the New York Times. A court here has ruled that French internet service providers must block access to a website that shows pictures and videos of police officers arresting suspects taunting protesters oh, this is in the United States, and allegedly committing acts of violence against members of ethnic minorities. The law enforcement officials who had denounced the site as an incitement to violence against the police welcomed the decision. The judges have analyzed the situation perfectly. This site being a threat to the integrity of the police and made the right decision, says Jean-Claude Delange, Secretary General of the Police Union. And remember, cops are not in a union.
That's what that lady said.
Yeah, I know. I heard her say that. I don't know what the hell it was she was talking about, but...
She said the cops are not blue-collar.
Well, I don't know what she means by that. Cops are not blue-collar. The cops are about as blue-collar as it gets. Let me ask you something, man. If that's not a blue-collar job, going out and sometimes having to wrestle a drunk into a cop car, and sometimes, you know, having to clean the vomit off the front of your uniform, and sometimes having to stand there while someone calls you a pig while you're, you know, writing a ticket. I mean, does that sound like an executive-level job to you?
I guess not, man. There's no cop or executive I know about.
So, yeah, it's a blue-collar job, and on top of that, they're in a union. But I guess that's not a union either. Anyway, but free speech advocates, so these are the cops. They're saying, you know, we would rather not have a website where you are showing film clips that allegedly show cops doing things. We don't know if they have been edited. We don't know if they are being uploaded, you know, if they're current, if these are French police, what are, you know. So we really don't know, and we believe this is an incitement to violence. Now, there are free. Now, would this ever happen in the United States? I don't know. But free speech advocates reacted with alarm, saying the ruling issued on Friday reflected a French tendency to restrict internet freedoms. The site is called Copwatch Nord Paris IDF. It's an offshoot of the so-called cop-watching groups that appeared in the United States in the 1990s. In the U.S., the courts have generally ruled that filming the police is protected by free speech in the U.S., generally. In France, there's no equivalent to the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, which bars Congress from making any law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. President Nicolas Sarkozy has called for the development of a civilized internet, promoting stricter law enforcement in the digital sphere in areas ranging from protecting copyright to preventing the spread of child pornography. Sounds like a smart thing. Child pornography is against the law and is not protected under the Bill of Rights because it is harmful to children, minors. The police had said they were particularly concerned about portions of the site showing identifiable photos of police officers along with personal data. I mean, that's asinine. Would you like your personal stuff put on the internet?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't want some creep to have it.
You don't want some creep to have it. What are you afraid is going to happen?
Why do you want to put it on there?
I'm not saying that I want to. I'm asking Bud, would you want your stuff on the internet?
No, I wouldn't.
Why?
Because I don't want a weirdo to get it.
You don't want a weirdo to get it. All right. Fair enough. Now, why should a weirdo be able to get a cop's address and a cop's phone number? Do weirdos have the right to have access to cops and not you?
Not weirdos.
Not weirdos. But what kind of people should be allowed to have a cop's home address?
Well, I mean, but it's free speech.
Oh, is it free speech? Why isn't free speech if Bud's name and address is on the internet? He works for a radio show that's broadcast across the country. Not only that, but a radio show that is under the supervision of the federal government insofar as we are on stations that are licensed by the federal government. So the fact of the matter is the Phil Hendry Show is directed by the laws of the federal government through the FCC, which is the public interest. So why shouldn't Bud's home and address, or mine for that matter, be on the internet?
Yeah, but you're going to get some weird ass coming to your house.
There we go again with the weird ass argument. So what? If you're saying that a weird ass is going to come to my house, and so therefore my name and address shouldn't be out for all to see on the internet, then you're saying that the same thing is true for cops. Why should they have their names and addresses out on the internet if a weird ass is going to come to their house? You see?
Yeah, but I don't know. It seems different.
Yeah, it seems different. You know why it's different?
Why?
Because one of them is a cop and the other one's you. That's why it's different. Because you don't mind having a cop's name out there. You don't want your name out there. That's why it's different. All right, so I agree with the French courts. You know, France has been getting cooler and cooler. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know what it must be, the time of year or something, you know.
Springtime in Paris.
Yeah, well, it ain't spring. It's autumn. Anyway, world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show here, 877-876-PHIL. Activision blends toys, video games with Skylanders and Spyro's Adventure. To impress kids these days, it's not enough to make another video game. Mere action figures won't do either, so Activision is merging the two. With Skylanders, Spyro's Adventure, Activision is using some of its Guitar Hero technology in a new venture that's part handheld toy, part digital entertainment. Aimed at kids, Skylanders is among the latest and most ambitious game in a growing genre that blends a child's physical world with a video game and online media. Now, that's what we need. We need the child's physical world, the video game, and online media. So, what does that mean?
As long as they're outside.
Yeah, as long as they're getting fresh air with their video game and their online media. Anyway, the new game marks Activision's latest stab, if you'll pardon the expression, at a must-have holiday hit, less than a year after it killed off its iconic Guitar Hero franchise. Although Activision Blizzard Incorporated still has hit titles such as Call of Duty, people are increasingly turning to free or cheaper games on mobile devices and social networks and buying fewer expensive video game discs that account for a large chunk of Activision's business. I remember when the gaming business was just, man, worth more money than I probably will misstate it, but the bread was unbelievable. More than movies. Skylanders, available for $70 beginning Sunday in North America, comes with three 2-inch-tall action figures. Spyro, the fire-breathing purple dragon, of course, along with others, such as a guy made of tree trunks, or Eruptor, the lava man. Extra...
No, what are you laughing about?
Nothing. Eruptor the Lava Man. Extra figures cost $8 each. Using a plastic platform about 6 inches in diameter, the figures connect wirelessly to your video game system, the same way plastic instruments connect to an on-screen musician in Guitar Hero. As with other games, you still control their characters on the screen, but you need the figures, which store data and transmit characters' histories to the nearest game console. Each works like a wireless thumb drive for data storage. So is it the character just stands there?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's still cool to look at it.
Yeah, I know it's cool to look at it, but the fact is, the characters are moving on screen.
Yeah, the best part of the character on screen. But you get to look at your character, he's standing there with all that data in him.
He's standing there with all that data in him, huh?
What are you laughing about, man? You got to get with it and be understanding of the whole video thing.
Oh, okay. Excuse me, man. He's okay, so cool. So he's a thumb drive. That's what he is, man, you know.
Yeah, but you can't call Eruptor a thumb drive.
Well, that's what I'm calling him. Eruptor is nothing more than a thumb drive, okay? And I think you know what I mean. Anyway, as with other games, you still control the characters on the screen, but you need the figures which store data and transmit characters' histories to the nearest game console. Connect it to the system, and the game recognizes all that the character has been through. So you can start playing the game at home. On a grab the Spyro figure and head to a friend's house. There, you can continue playing the game on the PlayStation 3 without losing all you've accomplished on the Y version. This hasn't been possible before. Oh.
Yeah, see? You take, you used to be in a Madden, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, like, now, you can take all your Madden data and you get it on another game.
Something but about you talking to me about this stuff, man.
What? Yeah, man, that's the way you sound. No, well, you sound dumber.
No, he doesn't sound dumber. You do. It's DNA level play, says Eric Hirschberg, CEO of Activision Publishing. How many times have you wished you could bring toys to life? Never.
Except for the Barbie doll.
Well, okay, the Barbie doll, yeah. I mean, every little boy wanted to bring that Barbie doll to life.
Yeah, and adults, too.
How many times have you said you want to bring a toy to life? Hirschberg calls it the first true cross-platform game. That means you can play the game on the Y, the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3, the Nintendo 3DS, online and on the iPhone and the iPad. Billy Pigeon, an analyst at M2 Securities who follows video games, said the concept is very risky, but if it pays off, it's going to pay off big. It's risky, for one, because there's no real way to tell what will drive kids and parents to a holiday feeding frenzy in the way Tickle Me Elmo did in 1996 and the Nintendo Y did a decade later. Well, of course. I mean, you're talking about taste. Public taste, popularity. You never know. You never know. Some things you can say, well, this is going to be a sure seller, you know, but you can never be sure.
Well, what do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, you can never be sure. If they're looking for a feeding frenzy, I mean, smoke and hit right off the outfield wall, you know, inside the park home run, or maybe a bases-clearing triple. I mean, something that's really boom, you know. You can't predict. You can't predict. There's no research in the world. Now, you can definitely sort of give the marketplace a once-over and say, well, seems to me this, that, and something else. I remember, I'll give you an example. I remember about not too long ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, maybe longer, right? I think it was actually just a couple of years after the outset of the decade, of the first decade of this century. And anyway, somebody said to me, they said, you know what's coming back on TV, don't you? I said, no, what? Fantasy. Every time the country is distressed, or every time the country is challenged, or every time the country is in a place of tension, fantasy is a big seller. I see, like World War II, during World War II, the horror movies and the Spider-Woman thing, and there were horror movies before that during the Depression, but Frankenstein franchise got reinvigorated a little bit, and
what about war movies and stuff?
The war movies didn't start coming out till after the war ended. See?
Oh yeah.
But during the war, what do you think people were watching? They were either watching Mildred Pierce, which was like a Saturday afternoon, I don't know, soap opera movies for women, because those were the ones that were at home, or these kind of, you know, fantasy horror things. Now, then the 60s came along. Same thing, civil rights, Vietnam, and what was big? Well, on TV, it was My Mother, the Car, The Flying Nun, I Dream of Jeannie, all of that stuff, fantasy life.
What about that one, It's About Time?
It's About Time. God, did that suck. God.
Yeah, you talk about you hate that. What's that about?
That was the stupidest show ever, man. It was about some astronauts that went back in time to the caveman days, and it was asinine. So now we have the first part of the, you know, the first decade of the new millennium, the whatever we want to call it, the turn of the century. And we got, what the hell have we got, man?
Yeah, well, like, you know, Fringe.
Yeah, Fringe. And X-Files was, you know, was kind of a, X-Files, I think, was more the exception than the rule back in the 90s.
Yeah, but what about Quantum Leap?
Okay, but you guys, no. I'm telling you that what was said to me by somebody who was in television programming, they said fantasy's coming back. So what they're basically saying is, yeah, sure, there were fantasy type shows, but it was not what it's become now, which is pretty much supernatural, all that stuff, man. It's pretty much all that stuff. And so I don't know why I'm bringing this up, other than to say that it's similar, I think, to the to this video game discussion that we're having, you know. That, you know, tastes change. And that's about as close as you can get to saying, aha, I know exactly what we need. I mean, that was a pretty hip thing for that cat to talk about, and for, I think, the rest of the people in TV to figure out. For you and me, it seems pretty. Maybe for those guys, it's a no-brainer. I don't know. You know. But,
Yeah, but they're paid to dig out. They have to be able to like, do research and stuff.
Yeah, they do research, and they do call-outs, and they do focus groups. Yeah, yeah. And it's very sophisticated the way they do it. But, you know, that's different from being able to predict this is going to be a boffo, out-of-the-park smasheroo, man. This is like, to be able to predict a phenomenon. Like Michael Jackson, like the Beatles, like whoever the hell else, you know, like Lady Gaga, you know.
Do you think Lady Gaga is like the Beatles?
I don't know, man. You know, when all is said and done, Lady Gaga may not even be as big as Madonna. I mean, we'll see, you know. She's still gaga-ing it, man. She's trying to, you know.
Trying to figure out whether it's going to be gaga or go-go.
What do you mean go-go?
Like go away, go-go, not dance go-go.
Go away. Yeah, that's pretty good, bud.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, yeah, but you think I just stumbled into it. I thought about it. Gaga or go.
Well, now you're messing it up. Gaga or go-go. Just get out of here. So, yeah, I don't know. At the end of the day, Lady Gaga may become big time. Or she may be not even as big as Madonna. We'll see. All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And remember our website, philhenryshow.com. We have live streaming video of the show every night and all of those archives and our podcast. And one other thing, the Daily Show is now free. If you do not have a subscription, you can stream our show for free on our website. Just go to philhenryshow.com, go to the 5-day archive, and the next day you will see something that says free stream. Just click on that and you can listen to the show. It's philhenryshow.com. All right, we'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, yes, yes, we're here. Anything to stop the bumper music.
You want us to change that bumper music?
I don't care. At this point, I don't care. Bumper music in talk radio has turned into, it's like a disease or something, you know. It's like, it's the next best thing to have in a show. We just go out and get a whole bunch of really cool bumper music. Oh, my God. Eating disorders, a new front in insurance fight. People with eating disorders like anorexia have opened up a new battleground in the insurance wars, testing the boundaries of laws mandating equivalent coverage for mental illnesses. Through claims and court cases, those with severe cases of anorexia or bulimia are fighting insurers to pay for stays in residential treatment centers, arguing that the centers offer around-the-clock monitoring so the patients do not forgo eating or purge their meals. But in the last few years, some insurance companies have re-emphasized that they do not cover residential treatment for eating disorders or other mental or emotional conditions. The insurers consider residential treatments not only costly, which of course is the main thing for insurance companies, it can't be too costly, but unproven and more akin to education than medicine. Even some doctors who treat eating disorders concede that there are a few studies proving that residential care is effective, although they believe it has value. We're not talking about going to the doctor and having him, diagnose you as being anorexic and then going home with some form of treatment, whether it be medicinal or otherwise. We're not talking about that. We're talking about residential treatment. That is, you stay at a place and,
Well, what are they doing?
Well, what they're doing is you're staying in this place, and they're making sure that if you're anorexic, they're making sure that you're eating. If you're bulimic, they're making sure that you're not throwing it up.
So it's like having a nurse.
It's like being in a, if you pardon me for saying this, like being in a mental institution. I mean, I'm sorry to have to put it that way, but however, having said all of this, the insurance companies, through their doctors, and they're claiming in this article, through other doctors as well, that this is not a proven treatment. There's nothing really scientific about this. It's a big guessing game. We've seen an increase. Here is Kathleen McDonald, Education and Prevention Coordinator for the Gail R. Schoenbach Fried Foundation, which is an advocacy group for those with eating disorders.
What's that mean? They want them to have more?
What?
Well, their advocacy for eating disorder.
Yeah, do they want to have them?
Do they want to have what? Eating disorders?
Yeah.
Why would they want that?
They said their advocacy.
That doesn't mean they go out advocating for eating. It's an advocacy group to help cure eating disorders, not advocate for more. Now I go to bed every night and I can't answer all the emails I get. It's disheartening. There's an increase in denials. Well, here's the question is, does it help people, man? I mean, if you're, you know, anorexia sucks. I mean, it looks bad. Have you ever seen someone who's anorexic?
I think so.
I mean, it's sad, man. It's freaking sad. So, and bulimia, you know, I don't even, I mean, it's just, these are illnesses that have a lot to do with delusional thinking. But nonetheless, putting them in a residential place, it should mean there's some kind of proof, you know?
Well, like it works.
Yeah, like it works. Like it, there's proof that this is, aha, this is good treatment. And so we, the insurance companies of America, we're going to, you know, we're going to make sure that we provide for this kind of thing. But that's not exactly happening yet. Both sides are closely watching the consequences of a major decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals, which ruled in August that insurers in California must pay for residential treatment for eating disorders and other serious mental illnesses under the state's mental health parity law. In the last decade or so, many states enacted similar laws, and in 2008, so did the federal government. The laws generally require that coverage for mental and behavioral disorders be equivalent to that for physical ailments like diabetes. I don't even understand what I'm reading.
Let me see it.
Can you make that out?
Blue Shield of California defendant in a lawsuit is already seeking to have the...
Here, let me see that. That ain't what he was reading.
I was reading the other part.
Let me see it. Law generally requires a coverage for mental and behavioral disorder be equivalent to... gobbledygook, gobbledygook, more gobbledygook. I can't figure it out.
Give me that. What are you guys doing?
You can't figure it out either.
What do you mean, gobbledygook?
I don't know what it says.
Well, nonetheless, it's something, and it's something, and it ain't getting better.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Whatever, dude. That's what she said. Next layer of air security, chat downs on top of pat downs. Dig this, as Ingrid Esser hands a Transportation Security Administration officer her identification and boarding pass for a flight from Logan International to Washington, D.C., she faces a flurry of questions. Where is she going? Why? How long is she staying? It was a new experience, says Esser, age 31, who works in public relations. It doesn't bother me at all. I understand their job, and it's keeping America safe. Uh-oh, here we go. It's none of your business. It's kind of like, you know, we've often talked in our country of our freedom of travel. You know, we do have freedom to travel in America. In some of these countries... when I say these countries, particularly these totalitarian or police state-type countries, they have internal passports, you know, where you can't go from state to state and you can't go from this place to that place. And there is, you know, restrictions on where you can travel.
You're kidding.
In the United States, we don't have that. We're asking questions. And it really doesn't have anything to do with travel, because if you were on a train... I don't think you'd be going through quite this kind of security. And if you were on a, if you're driving in your own car, you know, and if you think about it, driving in your own car as opposed to blowing up a train, let's say you're a terrorist, okay?
What are you talking about? You talking about driving in America?
Yeah, this, I'm saying. If you are a terrorist and you're on an aircraft, well, we know full well what you can do, quite a bit of damage.
You're flying in a building and everything.
We know that, bud. If you are a terrorist on a train, well, you can do quite a bit of damage to the train. To the surrounding areas, maybe not so much. But the train itself, unless, of course, the train is transporting dangerous chemicals, and you are able to do something to that train while it's going through a big city. I mean, you know, these are just thoughts that I'm having, right?
Well, you're trying to give a terrorist an idea?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. You think they ain't thought of it? But now let's talk about what we think is the most secure, in terms of the people around us, way of travel, our automobiles. we get into our car. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can go places. You can fly. You can take a train. You can drive in a truck. You know.
You could fly.
I just said fly.
No, but I mean, if you're Superman or something like that, but you can't do it. I mean, that's, you can't do it, but that would be cool.
Yeah.
Are you two guys idiots, or are you just trying to kid me?
Well, no, he's just saying it's be cool.
Yeah.
Big deal, it's cool. I'm talking about driving your car. You realize the damage a terrorist could do in an automobile? Like, we saw what happened in Scotland. But if you were a terrorist and you really had your act together and you really knew what you were doing, I dare say that an automobile can deliver quite a payload, if you'll pardon the expression. All right, that's it for tonight. The Phil Hendry Show, produced by Dan Northcraft, Fred Scotty, and Chris Johnson, and me, Phil Hendry. Don't forget, we're online at philhendryshow.com. And until tonight, we'll see you later on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.